This message was recorded at the 2005 Christian Home Educators of Colorado Conference in Denver, Colorado, held June 9th, 10th, and 11th, 2005. To find out more about CHEC, please visit the CHEC website at www.chec.org or call the CHEC office at 720-842-4852. To order additional messages from this conference, please visit www.bestchristianconferences.com.
Speaking and that doesn't terrify me. I volunteered to talk about literature-rich homeschooling, which is what Sunlight Curriculum is all about. They said, well, if you're going to talk on that, then you have to talk on, what is it, evaluating math methods and curricula. I'm going, why did you choose me? I thought, well, maybe somebody knew that I was a math whiz when I was in school, and I was. But that doesn't necessarily qualify me very well for helping other people learn how to do math. Then I thought, you know, just take the assignment. It's like school. You do the best you can. I hope I can be of service to you. I think before I begin, though, I should probably kind of get a sense. What are you hoping to get out of our time here this afternoon? I mean, truly, I've been to several homeschool conferences, and I've never had this large a group, and it just blows me away that you're all here to figure out about math, of which there's at least a dozen well-known programs, and everybody has very strong opinions, and even as I was walking up here, somebody stopped me and said, I want to see what you're going to say because I have some very strong opinions about this. And I thought, well, that's great because I have only a very few narrow strong opinions. And Sunlight Curriculum, for example, carries six different programs. And that's the only thing that we carry. There's handwriting. We carry three handwriting programs because we just realized there's three completely different kinds of styles of handwriting. And people have, again, very strong opinions about handwriting. Everything else, we've said we wanted to choose the best of the best, one thing, and only one thing. And we've been able to do that in every other area except math. So we are ourselves carrying six of these well-known programs, and there's all these other ones on top of that. So I don't know even how to elicit from you what you're hoping to get today. Yes, sir.
Doing it every day. He just blew it off for the last 2 months and we didn't even find out until school was over. He can do the work, but it's just, and so just, what's the right curriculum for him tied in with the learning styles? Kids have different learning styles and perhaps in math, that makes the most difference. If you put in the wrong style for them, if they don't
right.
Have sacks in math, you try to make them do it.
Okay, so we got, by the way, I have to repeat because we're being recorded, so I can't possibly repeat everything you said, but basically you have a son who just finished algebra, but he didn't do very well, and you're trying to figure out, well, what could we do that would help motivate him and so that he could do better. Yes, sir.
If we're using Saxon for my two sons in algebra 2 is where we're at. We're just trying to figure out if this integration of geometry and trig into their whole curriculum is going to really work.
Okay, so this is interesting. We got two people at the Algebra 2 level. Both of them, the only program that they mentioned happened to be Saxon, but yes, ma'am.
I'm using Saxon also. I'm in Saxon 2, so it's beginning.
Yes.
I love math, and every time I pull it out, my daughter is like, oh, my goodness, not again.
Right. Okay, so we got a mom who's using Saxon 2, so she's at the front end of math, and mom loves math, and daughter is not excited at all. Yes, sir.
We have a second grader, and we, I guess, had two different types of math that we use, but we're both engineers, and we want them to enjoy math. And we have younger kids that, you know, we want to be able to use this for, so We like Singapore from what we've read. We're looking at Horizon also.
Okay.
And maybe even Nikon.
Okay, so we got another down at the front end, second grade level. Two engineer parents, and they want their kids to love math. Yes, ma'am.
I did homeschool a son who had still struggles with math. But I'm a homeschool evaluator, so I go around and I hear different parents say, my child can do this, and I can figure out certain kinds of underlying skills they might be missing. And they'll say, well, what would I do with math? So I'm sort of wanting to get an overview. It says, I'm evaluating math.
Right.
What are the basic things that
okay, how to evaluate it? Okay.
And how much repetition is actually really necessary? Actually, we didn't say how you do whole booklets or whatever of the same kind of thing. You know, how much do they need?
So how much repetition is necessary? I probably shouldn't let this go on too long because then we won't move on. But I do appreciate hearing this because it helps me somewhat understand, hopefully, our audience. As I was thinking about how I would talk about evaluating math programs and choosing math programs, the first thing that struck me is, well, you always want to start with the goal in mind. What do you want your kid to know and to be able to do? And one of the things that has bothered me through the years is that a lot of parents say, you know, I won't talk about where the parents are coming from, but a lot of parents say, you know, this kid is never going to be good at math. They're never going to do a job that requires math. So let's not worry about getting a top-notch program if we can just get them trained with basic numeracy so they can do their addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division. That's good enough, and I'm happy. I would like to challenge you not to limit your kids. That's the first thing that I'd want to suggest right from the beginning, is don't assume down. You know, by the time they're in high school, you probably will get a very strong sense, and even earlier with some kids, you will get a sense, this child is just totally uninterested in math, and there is really nothing I'm going to do to change that basic bent. That's my opinion. But the biggest thing I'd want to say here is don't limit them from the beginning. I would say that we want the kids to be able to be comfortable with numbers, to be able to use numbers, keep their minds flexible with respect to mathematical concepts. And I'm going to be talking about that. Honestly, I think possibly the greatest value I'm going to give you here is not even with respect to specific programs. So I have samples of about 8 different programs, several that Sunlight doesn't carry. But here, as far as choice matrices, I said that there are choice matrices. That's on the outline there for you. Some of the things that you might use in evaluating one against the other. A big one that we saw as we started off when we first went into business carrying Saxon, that was the first program we carried. We said, hey, half the people are buying Saxon anyway. Why should we go against the flow of the marketplace? You provide people what they want. So we carried Saxon. Honestly, I'm not terribly excited about the program. I got to be careful here because I'm not here to I want to be careful about advocating one thing versus the other, but I do want to be pretty open about at least my evaluation to whatever degree that's useful. One of the problems that we felt as we evaluated Saxon with our own kids was that it was very good at calculation, but it was not very good at problem solving. They have problems, certainly, and you do even have some story problems, but they're very carefully constructed so that your child can get the answer that is required. And these problems are formulated in such a way that you get success on the standardized tests. Again, it's kind of, I think the term is goosing the system. You know, you get to get a higher score that way. So you get good SAT scores at the end. And that is something that Saxon is very proud of. But that's been their goal. That's what they wanted to achieve. I don't believe that just being able to answer questions or being able to calculate, important as those things are, I don't think that that should be a goal for most of us with our kids. We want them to be able to solve real problems in real life. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. Another difference that you will find, and I'm sorry, this is an area where maybe some of you can actually provide better information about which programs meet one or the other, but spiral learning versus mastery at one time. Some programs, as I recall, this was the way it was when I was in school, you are presented a particular technique or a particular subject matter. We're going to do fractions now, and so you do fractions for several weeks, and then you're done with that unit, and then you move on to something else. That would be more the mastery program. Then there's the spiral program where you're introduced, and you use it a little bit, and then you're introduced to something else, but you continue to do some of this that you've just been doing, and you keep on introducing. Now, one strength that Saxon has, for example, since we keep mentioning Saxon, they tend, my understanding, my memory, is that they are very good at that kind of spiral technique. So they're going to be adding in, and they only slowly fade away the techniques that you've learned, say, 8, 10, 20 weeks ago. Some programs, though, are going to chunk it more. And, of course, sometime you're going to return, but if it's 2 years later, you may have kind of forgotten what you had studied 2 years before. So spiral versus mastery, what do you think is going to work better? Concrete or hands-on versus abstract. There are a number of programs, and this has become extremely popular in the homeschool environment today, where you have a lot of plastic or even metallic things that kids work with. Cuisinaire rods. Our family loved Cuisinaire rods. We love the Tangrams. I believe that my memory serves me correctly. No, these aren't Tangrams? What are these called?
Pattern blocks.
Oh, that's right. Pattern blocks. I'm sorry. My mind went has forgotten. Okay, that's right. Pattern blocks. There are all kinds of these things. Here's gram centimeter cubes. These weigh exactly, I believe, is it a gram? Yeah, it is a gram. I'm thinking kilograms here. See, I'm so far out of this stuff. They're 1 gram, and they're 1 cubic centimeter, and so you can put them together. You get an idea of volume and weight and all that. Those have the exact density of water, because water, 1 cubic centimeter is equal to 1 gram. So you have these hands-on, and you can demonstrate certain kinds of principles. Cuisinaire rods have different lengths, and they have their own color for each length, which length is related to unit measurements from 1 up through 10. And so you can kind of visualize that the 7-length rod plus the 3-length rod equals a 10-length rod. And so forth. A 3-length plus a 5 equals an 8. And so you can kind of see this kind of stuff. Some kids are very kinesthetic. That means action-oriented, manipulative. They almost require this kind of stuff. Certainly earlier grades, this has a lot of value. So you will find a lot of programs with this. But some programs don't provide that. So maybe you want to add that to it. Discovery mode or linear presentation. Personally, I love discovering things. Mequon math, I love because you're having to. It's like a puzzle you're trying to solve as you approach these problems, and they don't tell you how to solve the problem beforehand. You have to discover it, and then they go, "Good job. You solved it." And there are probably many different ways that you can solve it. And so they encourage kids to take math the way I believe you ought to approach math, as kind of a game, as a discovery puzzle. So some are discovery mode. Most math programs are very linear. They tell you what you're supposed to do, and then you do it. So for people who need that logical linear progression, that's the traditional methodology. A lot of programs were designed first for classroom use, and then they were ported over into the homeschool environment. This can cause problems. When you say, line all the kids up according to height, well, some of us have large families for whom that's not such a big deal, although you're not all doing the same math program, so to call Johnny and Betty and all the others from the other rooms, hey, let's line up and let's measure ourselves, it's a little strange. They're requiring of you things that you're not going to readily find at home. Other programs have been developed specifically by homeschoolers and or for homeschoolers. I have not used this. I was just told. Here's an algebra program that was developed by some homeschoolers. Horizons Math, my understanding, was developed specifically for the homeschool environment. So again, you can run into some difficulties when you're using classroom materials. You may have to modify them for your home use. Parental involvement required. Is it heavy, moderate, none at all? You know, when you're using a video program, a DVD or CD program, I've got, Dive Math, which is designed to go along with Saxon program in the high school level. Actually, they've moved now down, I believe, all the way to the 4-5 level. He's going to do the teaching for you, if you will. Problem, of course, is if he doesn't happen to catch your kid, you might be stuck because now you're really lost because you didn't have to struggle through it yourself. That's one advantage of being there, being the mom or dad who's teaching the subject. I do remember we touched on this way back when I was younger, and then you have to remind yourself or you have to call your friend or find the help that you need to understand. There are those from no involvement at all to moderate involvement. Some programs are more difficult for parents. You know, you're going to do it. Miquan, you are going to be involved. That's going to require probably more of your mental power because it's not something that you're familiar with. Fun, but it's some work. Other programs say like Horizons or Saxon. Okay, you've got to be alongside, but you're not going to be terribly required, not as much as some like Miquan. So, mode of presentation. Parent who runs through it, lectures it perhaps, video. You could go to a class. You know, there's a lot of us who work together in co-ops, and some people seem to specialize in this. Computer games. Or the computers. One thing that was brought to my attention several years ago, when we were our company first started with Singapore Math, a lot of people liked it because it's straight black and white. And compared with a lot of stuff on the market today, which is bright colors, they said they actually preferred the black and white. I cannot speak from personal experience or knowledge, but I have been led to believe that for some children with sensory integration disorders or ADHD, ADD kinds of things, the colors can be distracting. So if you have a child who is struggling in that area, you might want to look into whether perhaps we should go to a less, in some ways for many of us, less attractive approach because it will be less distracting to the child. I'm going to move right along here. You can tell I'm not making very strong recommendations for one program or another. One recommendation I would like to strongly make is no matter what you choose as your primary program, choose a second one that takes an opposite approach, if I can put it that way. I mean, if you've got one that's the linear approach, try doing the discovery method as well. If you've got one that's heavy with calculations, get something that's going to push them into story problems and real problem solving. I mean, real problem solving. So try to balance these two out. If you've got one that has no manipulatives, add some manipulatives. So I would not personally rely on just one program. In fact, I would go so far as to say add a lot of math games and puzzles There are books out. There's tons of these things on the market. If you go to Barnes & Noble or any place, here's Janice Van Cleve's Teaching the Fun of Math. I'm not strongly recommending this because, honestly, I've not even evaluated this. Play and Find Out About Math. I didn't feel too bad holding up Janice Van Cleve because I'm quite familiar with her science books, and we've always enjoyed those and appreciated them. But there are more difficult ones. Here's Math Games, 180 reproducible activities to motivate, excite, and challenge students. Now, that's at a much higher level. You got graphs and charting and other things like that. But you've got, I'm sure you're familiar with the kinds of books that you can get for on trips. My coworker who is sitting in the audience was telling me when she was growing up, her parents would cut out all the answers and they'd hand she and her brother problem sheets from regular math books, and then they'd go through it and because it was an exciting game. Did I get it right? I believe that math should be fun. It should be perceived as a game. I'd incorporate math into daily life, or if I could put it, demonstrate how daily life is mathematical. Talk about math. It's like, you know, repeat the, you know, talk when you're sitting down, when you're rising up, when you're walking, you know, when you go out and when you come in, Deuteronomy 6. Do that with math. I remember when I first brought Sarita, my wife, home to meet my parents, we were sitting at dinner, and my younger sister, who was still in high school, she asked my dad, who was an electrical engineer, she said, I don't understand this trigonometry stuff. So she's asking him about triangulation or something like that. And he goes, oh, that's fascinating. Well, Sarita came from a family, one who never said anything at the dinner table at all. You just sat there and you ate. But to even think that math could be interesting or fun just blew her away. So my dad said, hey, after dinner, let's go for a walk. So we all went for a walk, and Sarita and I were there with my dad and several of the other kids in my family. We have six. excuse me. So we're walking along, and he's explaining triangulation. And he's saying, see that tree over there? You know, you can calculate the height of the tree, and he's explaining how through trigonometry and rats, my mind is going blank here, but anyway, the ratios, you know, according to the length and the angles and all the rest of it, you can figure out what the height of that tree or the height of the mountain, or in astronomy, you can figure out how far away the planets are, at least out to a certain distance. When you get too many light years away, the angles aren't big enough to be able to calculate anymore. But to be able to bring that home to your own kids, I'm thinking one common area that where many of us could really bring our kids along is through consumer math. When you're going to the grocery store, make them calculate. Well, what's the better deal? Now, in modern grocery stores, if you can kind of be like the magician, pretend, you know, distract them from where it says how much it is per ounce. But if you go, okay, this is 18 ounces and it's $2.95. How is that compared with this thing that's 16 ounces and $2.69? Which is the better deal? I mean, just get them working in their minds. They should be able to handle that stuff. And as you work with them, they're actually show them that they don't need to know it down to the penny. Show them how, okay, just related. Which is, you know, I'm not using a good example for me to do it here on stage under the pressure of all these eyes looking at me. But, you know, 16 ounces of peanut butter for $1.89 is a little bit more than 10 cents an ounce, right? $1.60 would be 10 cents an ounce. $1.89, oh, that's about 29 cents more. So actually it's close to 12 cents an ounce. Well, what if we got this 50-ounce jar and it was $4.95? Which one is a better deal? Oh, well, 50 ounces at $4.95, that's less than a dime an ounce. So can you see how you could do that? In your head, you're not getting the exact numbers, but you're helping your kids to start getting a sense of math. They're getting the general feel of it. They are, as I was suggesting earlier, they're keeping their minds flexible. I guess I kind of think of it almost like working with clay. As you keep working the clay, it gets soft. If you keep working with the math, it you become comfortable with it. Your kids will become comfortable with it. When I'm in our company, we often have certain numbers put up, and it's a habit of mine from years of doing this stuff. I'll go, oh, so that's about 12 cents, and that's about 13. So this is, and people kind of go, how do you do that? Well, I just constantly am making those kind of calculations in my mind, and I'm not doing it exactly. And occasionally they catch me making an error, and then I'm deeply embarrassed. But you know, we can do that. Wherever you are in a store, at whatever store, how about counting back change? Again, you're manipulating, you're using numbers. You're counting down, you're counting up. Inflation or interest. Wow, we're borrowing money. Or this credit card is going to charge so much. Again, I don't force my kids, I don't force myself to calculate it's 5.99% interest. Well, let's get it down to the penny. Okay, it's 6%. You know, and if you can just get your kids to work with these kinds of numbers, and if you do this out loud with them and help them work these things through, again, it will help. It's like the putty or it's like the clay. Magazine subscription is 1 year at $10.95, a better or worse deal than 20 issues at $19.95. You know, you just work with those numbers. Analytical math. When this is something that we're confronted with often in our company. It's easy to get hard numbers. You know, well, we sold, I'm totally making up these numbers. We sold $1.5 million worth of goods to California. Oh, wow, you know, California is a valuable state. We only sold $500,000 to Alaska. Oh, that's a bad state. Well, those are the hard numbers. And it amazed, actually, this is a problem that I just was dealing with a couple of weeks ago. Where somebody said, well, here's the way I would order the states. And he put California at the top, and I think New York was number two, and it went on down from there because he was dealing with the hard numbers. I said, wait, the hard number doesn't really tell me much of anything. California and New York are huge states. Alaska's pretty small. Let's make some ratios. I'm always dealing with ratios. So I believe you want to help your kids realize ratios. So again, it's through practice, it's through doing these things with them, even outside of whatever program you may choose. I believe that you're going to actually gain almost more benefit. Almost, it's more important that you're doing these things than which specific program you choose or which specific two programs you happen to choose. By the way, Alaska turned out. There was one area in Alaska we were. We'd been invited to sponsor a TV program for homeschooling, national TV, and they said, which is your most profitable area of the country, or which is your best, where are your best customers? Something like that. What's your best customer area? And so this was why I had this data. They're going, California, wow, New York. And I looked at it, New York City, I think we were making something like 7/10 of a penny per person. You know, in Alaska, there was one area, this whole city, we were making over $3 per person in the city. It just blew me away. Well, maybe the one area is more responsive than the other, maybe. So ratios or percentages. This is really important, in my opinion. Modes of presentation, charts, graphs, matrices, spreadsheets. Again, using this stuff. Now, when I was growing up, we didn't use a lot of this kind of math. We were not taught very much about how important presentation is. But the more I've used some of the tools, especially in modern electronic spreadsheets, the more I realize how valuable it is. The presentation itself helps you understand the meaning of the numbers. Practical everyday math, distance versus time. Have you ever wondered why when you're driving the rule is 4 seconds behind the person in front of you? Why don't they tell you distance? There is a distance calculation as well, which you may be aware of. But they don't tell you how many feet. It's always stay at least 4 seconds behind the person in front of you. And that's approximately equal to 4 car lengths behind that person. And so it changes, not four car lengths, it's 1 car length per second. That you want to be behind that person. So if you're No, I still didn't express it right. It's one car length per 10 miles per hour. So if you're going 70, you'd better be seven car lengths behind the person in front of you, and that will be approximately equal to 4 seconds. So it's some of that kind of stuff, just working through, even explaining or working through with your kids. What's the logic of this? Why would that be? Why do we have to change the distance as we're going faster? Clocks and time, calculating time differences. We're going to fly from Colorado to New York City. The flight is going to be 4 hours. We're going to take off at 8:15 in the morning. When will we arrive in New York City? Well, that's easy. It's 12:15. Well, no, it's not. Why is that? Well, there's the time difference. Well, now you start working those things in. And again, it's mental math manipulation. You're doing this. You're just asking them to work it through. Don't just always refer to a chart. Have them work it through. You do it yourself. Centigrade versus Fahrenheit conversion. Meters to feet conversion. Our kids were swimmers, competitive swimmers, and some pools were meter, and most of them were yards, and so they had to know the differences. Volts, watts, amps, cycles, and hertz. If you're talking about sound and electrical current and the cycles that they go through, the Doppler effect. Why is it that when the car is coming towards you, beeping its horn, or even if it isn't beeping its horn, you can hear it in the rain. What happens there? And just talking through that kind of stuff. This is all math-oriented stuff. I just talk it through. Well, I did bring curriculum samples, and honestly, I think I should almost turn this over to many of you who may have used it. Let me ask. One sample we had given away was Matthew C. So I don't have any Matthew C here, but I have Sachs and a couple of samples, Making Math Meaningful, Miquan, Horizon, Professor B, who is not well known. I was quite impressed with the way he presented his material. Singapore Math, Video Text Algebra, for you who are dealing with higher level kids. The Dive CDs to go along with the Saxon Math. Key 2 series. These are kind of more workbook oriented to help develop skills in specific areas. I've got some manipulatives. The representative from Right Start Math, which I know nothing about, but she's here. I'm sure she'll be happy to talk to you. one last thing, or a couple of last things that I'm going to say. I will open it up to questions, and then, you know, we can have a mass mob here. Here are a couple things that I would like to share from my personal experience as a little bit too much of a smarty pants or something when I was growing up, because I got myself into trouble. I really did very well with math up through the latter portion of trig, and then I ran into real problems because I had been too smart for my own good. First thing I'd like to strongly recommend, check your kids' math assignments daily. Find any strategic problems early. Don't wait 3 months and then discover that, oh man, he's completely lost. Try to locate that quickly and go, he's having difficulties with these problems. I wonder why. Try to evaluate that. By the way, Sunlight Curriculum has forums. My thought is, based on my experience out on the web, I spend hours pretty much every day trolling around the web. I believe our forums may be some of the most active in the homeschool marketplace. At this time, there's no charge to get in there, and there are literally thousands of people who visit every day. If you have questions or problems, I'd like to encourage you, invite you, come sign up, join the forum community, ask your questions, you will get answers. So if you're going, I'm noticing this, anybody have any idea what I could do? What may be the difficulty here? There are, again, at least dozens, but literally thousands when you count everybody who comes to our forums on a daily basis, but at least several dozen in any one forum who would be happy, I'm sure, to try to provide some help to you in that area. Another area that I'd like to strongly encourage you, get your kids to memorize their math facts early. So that it's mental, so they're not struggling working with their fingers, or they should know that through the 12 by 12 multiplication like that, at least. If you can get it up to the 20 by 20, that would be even better. But again, I think it is not only memorizing those facts, which, by the way, we just found this amazing tool, FlashMaster, which is an electronic flashcard system, if you will. It's battery operated. It costs $50. Everybody who's bought it has just kind of gone gaga over it. I haven't used it, though I looked at it briefly. But apparently it's partially because there's timing involved, and there's more interaction than a regular flashcard when you're sitting in front of the person and holding the flashcards up. But there's kind of games built in here and all the rest of it. This does work with all four functions. Yes, sir?
Can you buy that here?
We do not sell anything here at the conference, but you can certainly get our catalog. I'm sorry, but thanks. Well, I won't go into our philosophy of why we don't sell at the conference, but anyway. So get them to memorize their math facts so that they can do in their head what can be done in their head, and they don't have to rely upon paper or their fingers or excruciating work. This was my downfall. When they begin doing multi-step problems, have them, teach them, force them to document their work, to follow the appropriate form. That was my problem. I was great at mental math. And I did just fine through algebra, sitting in algebra class. This is my story. This is the story I tell my kids and everybody else. I'm sitting in class about halfway through algebra. I was doing algebra in eighth grade, which wasn't traditional at that time. I was a little early. But I'm sitting in class, and my teacher wouldn't look at me, but I knew who she was talking to. She said, "Some of you aren't doing your homework. There's a new rule in this class. If I call for your homework and you haven't done it, I'm going to dock you half a grade point on your final grade for the semester. So you better do your homework." And I thought, who's this homework for, you or me? I don't need to do this homework. I come in here and I can do it in my brain on the spur of the moment. When you ask us to go to the board, I always get it right. I've never missed a question on a quiz or a test. I don't need this homework, and I'm not going to waste my time doing it. And that was kind of my attitude at the time. I did that to my English teacher, too. That's another story. But, part of the problem, one of the sad things to me is that a lot of teachers don't know why they assign things, why they do what they do. It's just something that we do. We've always done it this way. You do homework. And she didn't have a good answer to me. My English teacher didn't have a good answer to me about why she had assigned me a certain thing. So I kind of said, well, look, if you want this, then I'll do well, I didn't quite say, then I will do. I said, if you want to see this about me, well, then let me do this. And if you want to see that about me, well, why don't you let me do this? Because I really don't want to do the specific assignment you gave me. And she said, well, I really want to see this, so do this. And 20 years later, I discovered I missed something because I didn't do the assignment she had originally assigned, but she didn't have a good answer for me. Same thing here with algebra. She didn't have a good reason why I needed to do the homework. Well, it was because I just needed to learn the form. Just follow the form. So here I was going on through geometry and trig, and I do everything in my brain. I go, oh, there's the answer to this portion of the problem because it's a multi-step problem. So I'd write that number here, and then I go, okay, that one number, and then I do some more calculation. I'd write that here, and I just have these random numbers on the sheet of paper, and then I get the answer. Well, you can do that to a certain point, but after you get to about seven steps and these humongo formulas, yet you're lost. And that's what happened to me. If I would have just learned, you know, it's okay, just record it, just go on down, follow the form, it's much easier later. So anyway, that's an encouragement. That's pretty much the point. The last point that I'd like to make, seek to instill a sense that math is amazing. It's fun. It's a game. It's a puzzle. You can do it. Enjoy it. Well, I'm going to stop there because that's about all I had that I thought I could give of some value, hopefully, to all of you wonderful people who are sitting here in front of me. Are there any questions that maybe I can answer or maybe somebody else in the room could answer? Yes, ma'am.
My son is 14. He doesn't know math. Not because we haven't tried, but he's dyslexic.
Ah.
And, I mean, tried all kinds of things. Is there anybody who...
Okay, a woman has a 14-year-old who is dyslexic, and she's tried everything, and he just does not know his math facts. Anybody have any suggestions on what to do? You know, maybe I could... If you have an answer, I'm going to try running around because I don't want to repeat. We'll really waste a lot of time. Anybody have any suggestions that might be of service? Yes, ma'am. Hold on a second here.
I just know that there's a program called Brain Training. And
we've done it.
You've done that, and it didn't help. Okay.
The woman who's at the French table, her son is dyslexic, and she came running over to the Right Start math table and said, I've tried a zillion programs. This is the only one that works because it is so visual.
The Right Start programs, mm-hmm.
Let's talk about it some more. Yeah. And go talk to her. She's at the French.
I know her.
Okay.
We still live in the same town.
Well, talk some. Have you talked with her much?
Uh-huh.
Okay, great.
Okay. Excuse me. Any other question? Oh. No. Oh, sorry.
Can you even point out some of the what you might think are good or bad points of any of the particular programs you have up there?
Sorry.
She said sorry. I think the one program that is most popular is the one program that I feel that I have the strongest attitudes towards, and that would be Saxon. And because I don't believe that it really builds numerate students. I don't think that they've really understood math. As I've talked with other people about it, they said we could follow the pattern, and as long as everything was presented in the pattern that it's presented, we had good success. But as soon as I was presented with a problem outside that unique presentation, we were lost. And I've talked with a lot of people who had similar experiences in school. You know, I had straight A's in high school in math, but I didn't know math. And it, because the system works, so I get great grades or I get great test scores, but I don't really understand what's going on behind it. That would be a weakness in that program. See, I hate settling for this, but if your whole goal is just let my kid graduate, get the score, okay. In terms of boredom, because there is so much repetition, that's another aspect to the program. A lot of people say, yeah, but my child needs that repetition. Some kids that I'm aware of, the only reason they need the repetition is because they are so stinking bored, they just don't want to do it. And so they, almost just to cause trouble for themselves and their parents, they will do it wrong. Anyway, let's see. Some other ones. Miquan, I personally really enjoy because it is discovery-oriented. It will teach your kids some aspects of number theory, if I can call it number theory, even multiplication and division, officially, quote, in the first grade level. You're just getting some of the concepts. So that's one of those. I honestly don't know that I'm in a position to speak much about beyond that. several years ago, we introduced to the American homeschool community the Singapore math program. We weren't the ones who published it, but we were the first to kind of pick it up and start marketing it into the homeschool marketplace. It seems to have a really nice balance of word problems and calculation. It does not have the manipulatives. It is not as homeschool teacher friendly as some other programs. And so therefore this year for ourselves, we picked up Horizons. This is not supposed to be a selling seminar, but I will let this person who started her own program for some reason to at least say a few words about Right Start Math.
Actually, I'd love to say I started it, but I didn't. That's fine, though. Dr. Joan Cotter is the creator and developer of the Right Start Math curriculum, and she did her research when she did her PhD on why do Asian children understand math better than U.S. children, and there are a couple components when you're looking at a math curriculum. My suggestion always is you know who your author is, and then you know if they researched first and then created the curriculum versus created the curriculum and then researched. The thing Dr. Cotter brings to it is she's an engineer, her undergrad. She's a curriculum developer as her master's, and her PhD is math education. And she's Montessori trained and certified, and she's Suzuki trained. People who like math and enjoy math and do math well often say they like this curriculum because it teaches the child to think that way. And I agree with so many of your things that you're saying about how you need to have them think outside the box, think real life problems. Many of the problems you're mentioning that you want children to do are integrated into the curriculum. When you're talking about visualization, what's key to this abacus is it meets the three criteria of a good manipulative. When you're looking at manipulatives, are they first visualizable? Second, do they represent the number system? And third, are they easy to manage?
Can you explain those three words?
Easy to manage? Visualizable?
One of those three concepts, what does that really mean?
When you say visualizable, what's our first God-given manipulative? Our hands. So what is our brain programmed to see in? To see in groups of fives and tens. And when you're talking about Asian children learn to count or add on from fives and tens. Math should only be 5% for rote and 95% taught for understanding. So the Romans knew that you needed to visualize in groups of fives and tens, right? Right, because you know that the 5, the 10, the 100, the 500, okay. So the abacus, when you look at this, can you tell me without counting how much that represents? Yeah, sure you can. We know, though, if when you have, like, there are abacuses around that have all the beads are the same color, you have to keep counting. So is this visualizable? Yes. So you can easily see that 10 and 4 more. You can visually see it's a 10-4 or 14. All right? So when you're looking at manipulatives, make sure they're visualizable. And this is one of the key components. Manipulatives for manipulative sake isn't worth anything. You need to have good, strong manipulatives. Okay. Many manipulatives are just adding on. We believe.
So you said visualizable.
Represent the number system.
Okay.
Okay, 1 to 100, right? And on the back, we're working with place value. We know Asian children understand place value by the end of first grade. Only half of U.S. children understand place value by the end of fourth grade. And if you talk to educators in the classrooms, many of them will say, and you have probably experienced with your own children, some of your children are struggling with place value in sixth and seventh grade, right? When we teach from outside coming in, you give them a general knowledge, like when a child learns that 2 and 3 is 5, they're going to pattern off to 20 and 30 is 50, 200, 300 is 500, and then we go to thousands. We work with thousands. Children in level B, roughly 6-7 years old, are adding 4-digit numbers because they're learning the pattern of math. Math is a science of patterns. You teach the patterns. We are a visual pattern people. I believe when you're looking for a good curriculum, if that curriculum works well for your special needs child, then it's going to work well for everybody. Now, some children, and this you certainly, John, could have handled any math curriculum. It wouldn't have mattered. You would have done fine in it. There are children who will not do fine in just any curriculum. And if they can do well in one curriculum, then everybody will do well.
Could you explain what manageable?
Easy to manage. It's all contained right here.
Oh, so you're not going to lose it.
You're not going to lose any parts or pieces. And I don't know about your homes. When I mean, you all are probably way more organized than I am. I always have this great idea that I'm going to be able to put everything in a nice little rubber bin and all this jazz. Well, I have I have two very energetic children. I have five children, but two are a little more energetic than the others. And it all starts out good. And when I'm not looking, they're in there, and it's all over everywhere. So this is easy to manage. It stays contained. I tell parents most of the time this won't break unless, of course, you have a really feisty kid who's going to pull out a wire. So it meets the three criteria of a good manipulative. Nothing fancy. Like when you're looking at fraction charts, aren't they awesome? And I want to just respond when I had said, did you look at the abacus? And you said, well, I have it. The abacus by itself, you can't do anything with it by itself. You have to use it with something. We believe games are to math as books are to reading. All right, when you're looking at math games, what do you need to look at? Well, many of our over-the-counter games, you already have to know your facts before you can really play them and before they're enjoyable. If a game is worth its weight at all, it needs to be able to teach you how to learn your facts. You should be able to have many levels play together. Right Start has a math games book, 300 games. Multi-levels can play them together. So be cautious when you're looking at math games. Is it just another form of rote memorization? There is a significant percentage of the population that cannot rote memorize. Does that mean they can't ever do math? No. Why can't people rote memorize? Because rote memorization comes out of the behavioral theorist Thorndike in 1910 said that. What we want, we are not, as humans, we don't do stimulus response. When we answer questions, we answer it based on something we've learned before. So if you give a child a flashcard and you don't give them anything to hook it with, they're not going to get it. That's why for much of the population, flashcards are devastating. The only people that really enjoy flashcards are those who know their facts, right? Those who don't know them don't usually enjoy them. So we use, instead of flashcards, we use games. Because if I asked you, what is your favorite recipe, you would tell me, whatever, and I'd say, well, how did you learn that recipe? Well, I made it 20 times versus I wrote it out 20 times. Okay? So playing games that are quality games that teach for understanding, you will learn your facts. And it'll be inside you. And when we're teaching math, what do we want to do with our kids? We want to spark the fire, right? And if you light the fire, you're asking the questions, which is exactly what you said. You ask them questions for them to discover. You don't give them the algorithm. You know, you ask them so they can discover it.
Somebody else wants to talk.
Okay. As I said, I didn't even know what she was going to say, but I thought that was very valuable. Thank you. Okay, we got another question over here.
How long in a day should math take for, let's say, a first grader? And I know that's subjective compared to how well they're doing, but... and then also, if you are looking to switch into a program and they've done really well with a program, like I did use Saxon last year, and she really liked it, but I'm bored out of my mind. So I would like to switch, and then we're adding a second child to do it. So just the time commitment of doing more than one child. And then, so how, I mean, is a half hour, an hour, or, you know, per child?
I'm very reluctant to hold myself up as an expert.
I have a child who could spend half an hour on one problem.
We had a child like that too, and in fact, he required my wife basically to sit beside him and kind of look their next number, you know. So it really can change child to child. Hopefully. I don't know, my personal opinion, I'd like to see them spend no more than 20 to 30 minutes in formal behavior along those lines. Again, see, for me, the biggest aspect of math is this outworking in real life. And probably with games is, I didn't catch her name, but or a Flashmaster to get the basic, your basic math facts or whatever. The games are going to stick with your kid far more. In terms of switching from one program to another, that's beyond me in terms of suggesting what you do. I think you really, here's one thing that I do strongly recommend for people. You want, whatever you do in any area of homeschooling, I do believe, one, I believe in parent-child interaction. I don't believe in just sending the child off by him or herself to go educate him or herself. I want to be involved. And therefore, it's vital, I believe, that both you and your child enjoy the program. So if she's loving it but you're not, I think you're wise to start looking for something to replace it with. That's my little piece of advice. Here's a gentleman with something to say.
Well, I was just going to share a couple of things that I had gone through, because I agree with what this lady said, but we've gone through algebra in a 10th grader, and what we found was the first couple of years you really have to discover, you know, if, in my opinion, if your child can learn the rote memorization, if he can learn his multiplication tables and he likes that just fine and he likes the Saxon math, let him do it. We had a son, he went all the way through Algebra 1, he loved Saxon math, it was great for him. We had another one, didn't like it at all, he hated it. And like you were saying, you can discover pretty quickly whether a kid likes something with a lot of colors and it's more entertainment, or whether he just wants the black and white Saxon math and he wants to go through a lesson a day. You're going to know that by the second or third grade. And that's really, what, in my opinion, what you need to figure out. You need to figure out what learning style is best for your child, because I think that matters the most in math. Because if you try to force feed somebody that wants the colored pictures, if you try to give them Saxon, it ain't going to work. And if you try to go the other way, it's not going to work either. So first couple of grades for us were finding out what it was going to take, what kind of curriculum it was. And we talked to different people. And we even went down to the library. You can go down to the library and just look at different kind of books, and we'd say, how do you like this? I hate that, Dad. What do you like this? Oh, I like those pictures. And he loved it. And so we ordered that one, and it was great. Huh. So it was just that kind of a thing, but it was really their individual style.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am. Hold on a second.
I was just wondering where the Abeka math falls in the scale of different math styles. Is it more most like the Saxon? Is it most like...
Who knows? I don't know. I know nothing about Abeka.
It's got colored pictures, you know.
It's kind of in the middle. If you want to think of Saxon as being black and white, boom, 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 then there's other ones like maybe Merrill that are really colored pictures. Abeka is a pretty good mix. You know, we've used that with a couple. That's a good balance in the middle. That's more like what I used traditionally back in the 70s. That's what they were all like. You know, there's a few pictures in there, but it was a good balance. So that's been our experience, yeah.
If we've looked at Singapore math, I was wondering what kind of a style of program that is and what other program would complement it.
I can't answer your question. Somebody else here actually used Singapore with your children?
Singapore is what
you have
said? Yeah. I wouldn't call it the spiral approach.
Okay.
It's thinking math. It teaches them how to think in their head and figure problems out in their head. It's really good.
I, again, personally would want to encourage additional manipulative kind of things. By the way, while I agree with, I think she said her name was Roseanne, I agree. Okay, Roseanne. What? Some of these kinds of manipulatives are more geometric rather than arithmetic, and kids, there is that other side of math. There's spatial aspects, so I would like to encourage you, don't overlook, while Cuisenaire rods and other such manipulatives are useful and abacuses or abaci. some of these kinds of things can be really useful as well. Our kids played with these things until they were like 12, 13 years old. They'd make these unbelievable patterns. And there's just something that it does to your brain. I remember, I think I'm going to close on this one last story. I was in California and at the U.S. Center for World Mission. One of our coworkers was a graduate of Caltech. And he said it was very interesting because the guys at Caltech did just great in the engineering math areas, and the women seemed to struggle. And they finally came to the conclusion amongst themselves what was going on. The guys had played with Tinker Toys and all these other if you will, manipulatives. They had built stuff. And the women had none of that experience. So they had all the calculations, but they didn't have that kind of almost internal, innate understanding of what those numbers meant. So again, there's a value to some of this additional kind of stuff. One last point about manipulatives, you know, you don't have to buy play money. It's probably cheaper to use your own coins from your own pocket. There's that kind of stuff. You can build your own. Thank you so much for coming. Bye-bye.